This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Talks on renegotiating NAFTA are set for later this month, and Farm Country is concerned about changes to the trade agreement. Nicole Irwin reports that pork producers in the Ohio Valley could have the most to lose in a trade dispute.
Uncertainty about President Trump's threats to place a 20% tax on all Mexican imports has some agriculture industries squealing, especially the pork producers.
Mexico is one of the largest markets for pork from the United States. I think if Mexico doesn't get favorable treatment, we may have a 20% tariff imposed on our pork going to Mexico.
That's Jimmy Tosh, owner of Tosh Farms, the 24th largest pork production company in the U.S. With some 80 contract hog farms in Kentucky and Tennessee, he says trade with Mexico is a crucial part of the business plan for his farmers.
We have a competitive advantage because Mexico is right across the border for us, and they are a large purchaser of all of our agricultural products.
The Ohio Valley region has more than 4,700 hog farmers, contributing more than $900 million in product value. International Food Policy Research Institute Senior Fellow Joe Glauber worries about broader damage to the agriculture sector if the NAFTA talks break down and Mexico retaliates. Glauber was chief economist for the U.S. Department of Agriculture and was involved with negotiations when NAFTA was implemented 23 years ago.
You think back in the mid-90s, we were doing probably between Mexico and Canada about $10 billion worth of trade, and it's over four times that now. It's important for a number of commodities.
Within the first 5 years of NAFTA, there was a 130% increase in pork exports, which also boosted sales of yellow corn or hog feed, another important crop in the Ohio Valley. Jim Monroe is Senior Communications Director with the National Pork Producers Council, which has been trying to estimate the potential hit the industry could take.
Based on estimates we've put together, if we were to lose the current zero tariff base status that we have for North American trade, U.S. pork industry would lose approximately $1.5 billion. So obviously a catastrophic impact on the industry, and that's why the renegotiation that's taking place right now is so critical.
Monroe says a tariff could affect more than 17,000 jobs in pork production. Jobs, farmer Jimmy Tosh worries, could be lost to global competitors such as Brazil if the U.S. loses its NAFTA advantage.
Well, let's hope it's smoke and mirrors, but it is very concerning.
NAFTA talks resume in Ottawa on the 23rd. A new deal is possible by the end of this year. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Nicole Irwin.
The Ohio Valley Resource is made possible with support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. West Virginia University hosted a forum Wednesday about the current state and future of self-driving vehicles. Jesse Wright reports.
In response to the work being done in Congress around autonomous vehicles, West Virginia Representative David McKinley invited industry leaders and the public to examine the issue at a forum at the WVU Alumni Center in Morgantown. Executives from General Motors, Toyota, Tesla, and Uber discussed some of the hurdles they're facing and the breakthroughs they've made. But the main idea behind the forum, McKinley says, is to simply raise awareness about the autonomous vehicle industry and the potential benefits for average citizens.
Because now they've got a 92-year-old parent that can't get around. But what if they could dial up and get a car to come pick them up and take them to the grocery store, take them to the doctors?
McKinley says that while a lot of progress has been made in getting driverless vehicles to market, there are still plenty of issues to work out. Issues like the industry's insurance and liability implications. Or just getting people used to the idea of getting into a car without a steering wheel. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Jesse Wright in Morgantown.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:48. Mostly sunny skies today. High temperatures in the 80s. Clear tonight. Lows in the 50s and low 60s. And sunshine again tomorrow with highs in the 80s. Support for the weather forecast is provided by Erie Insurance, putting service first since 1925. Local agents available at erieinsurance.com. West Virginia 511 is reporting a vehicle accident in Kanawha County. It's on eastbound I-64 at mile marker 56 in Charleston. A few years back, West Virginia writer and filmmaker Danny Boyd stepped into the world of graphic novels. He released books like Carbon, a story about an ancient race of people and their effect on the coal industry, thousands of years later set in a mythological version of West Virginia. The follow-up, Salt, was released late last year. Dave Mistich spoke with Boyd about his latest graphic novel and some of the social and environmental issues the novel grapples with.
So, Danny, the last time we talked, we were talking about Carbon, which was the first installment in this mythological world, so to speak, and now comes Salt. Mm-hmm. Take us to the world. Let's start with Carbon. Describe that world for us, what happened, and then get us into where we're going with Salt.
Carbon was a story that I had nearly 30 years after living in Williamson and seeing the destruction of strip mining and those kinds of things. But in the movie world, as a filmmaker, I was never going to be able to have the kind of budget to do something that big. And then when I got into comics, it's like, oh man, this I finally can. So it's gods, monsters, and evil coal barons. So I started thinking about, as an entertainer, you know, coal. What is coal? Coal is organic material. It's plants, animals, people. What if it came back to life and ignited by an evil industrial power? So that launches the Carbon, which leads through into Salt with the lead character, Heat Hatfield. And you're right, it's a mythological approach with it. It's the tragic hero turned to epic hero.
There are some really heavy things going on here. I mean, for one, you know, there's sort of an apocalyptic vibe going on here. I mean, there, you know, in this one, there's some issues of climate change, global warming. Talk for a little bit about, you know, trying to use a platform like a graphic novel for a subject matter that is so socially, you know, ubiquitous at this point, so to speak.
It is so hard to digest. Who wants to turn on TV anymore? You know, after the last election, it's the last thing you want to bring joy in your life. So it's difficult for a creator, and I don't know if I was successful, but okay, how do you make these topics entertaining? That's number one. Number one, if it's not entertaining, you're not going to bring people to it, and hopefully at least through the back door. But, I mean, climate change, you mentioned. If you're a climate denier, this is no starter for us. But if you turn on TV right now and watch the Weather Channel with this new hurricane system coming through, even in a very stable society like ours, we're only a few clicks from melting down, you know, both politically, environmentally, all of those kinds of things.
There's one scene in particular I do want to address here, and that is a moment that particularly addresses issues of race. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things that, you know, whenever you talk to people about issues of race in West Virginia, you hear one of two things oftentimes. One of the things that you hear is, you know, normally from an outsider sort of perspective, I would say that West Virginia is very overtly racist, that, you know, that we're a bunch of hillbillies that are ignorant and have no progressive ideas as far as dealing with race. And then on the other hand, you hear something to the effect of there's such a low minority population that, you know, race isn't an issue here. I mean, it seems like you're trying to respond to seemingly both sides of that in this particular scene in some fashion or another.
I am, and thanks for picking up on that, Dave. It's a sticky wicket, and it was when I was writing this, I realized, man, I have my entire teaching career, 32 years with a historically black college university, lived in Tanzania, I live in a black community by choice, and when you're around that community, you start hearing those things, oh, we're all black in coal mines, or coal, you know, we come out that way, so we're not racist, that kind of thing. And then you start to hear it's like, no, not really. That's only if you're white. And I realized the white privilege that I carried that I didn't really acknowledge. And I really wanted a scene. I don't know if I was successful, but I wanted that scene with Willie Mays Vincent, who's like one of the main heroes of this whole epic thing. With the scene with Heat Hatfield, the main character, where he says, "Well, you're my best friend." Well, that's that stereotype people always say. I'm not prejudiced. Look at my best friend. Well, no, you need to look at these things a little bit deeper.
Right before we started speaking, you handed me a sheet of paper. It's essentially just a one sheet, more or less a press release, so to speak, that deals with the Trump administration and how that's playing a role in making dystopian literature, interesting and marketable again. Yeah. Would be another word. What can you say, at least in your experience as a creator, as a graphic novelist, as a filmmaker, as a person that's delved into that particular aspect of art, or at least that kind of art, how's the relationship with the administration affecting the marketability or the conversation surrounding, what it is that you're doing?
Well, commercially, I probably shouldn't tell you, but I'm stand by this. I didn't think these things would happen, much of this. If you read the interview done with me at the end of SALT, I'm saying, hey, look, West Virginia's got the short end of the stick, America. How about Hillary? I said, Hillary, how about helping us out, and giving us a stimulus package after we built the country? So that's how little that I thought that this would happen.
But this was, obviously, this took place before the election.
You talk about bad luck timing. My book came out the day after the election.
Oh, wow.
Oh, you talk about sucking the oxygen out of the room.
Wow.
So these were like the most far-fetched things. But I will also tell you, would think, okay, well, that, I shouldn't talk about this commercially, but what I was saying is like, man, that cha-ching, that should really help. First of all, I don't want these bad things to happen. But secondly, no, it's not. You have to bring it back around. Okay, don't forget, this is entertainment. And if it could bring in a little of the H.G. Wells, things to come, kind of angle.
One of the things I look at in SALT, it's a story that seems like it's still not finished. Is that right? Is there more coming from this storyline? I look at Carbon. I knew at the time that SALT was going to be coming next. Where does this story sit at the moment?
Well, it has an ending in it, and I know we won't. It's a big, big, big ending in it, so hope that'll encourage people out to get the books, and we won't give it away, but it opens up another door. We always think things are black and white. It's this or it's that. We're very arrogant to think that we'll destroy the Earth. We can't destroy the Earth. We can destroy humankind as we know it. So it's not just, will we destroy humankind or will we not? It's like, well, is there something in the middle? And we're hinting a little at evolution here. And again, this mythological, that's probably as much as I want to talk about the ending.
And we'll leave it with that. Danny Boyd, thanks so much.
Thank you, Dave.
That was Dave Mistich speaking to writer and filmmaker Danny Boyd about his latest graphic novel, SALT. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Marshall University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.